It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
That's
I've lived all these years with a goatee and nobody ever explained to me how that's done.
Did I just replicate the opening to Dr. Horrible? I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know.
So that's the evil laugh. Hello. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world currently being recorded from inside this room. Only podcast in the world. There is a sci-fi action movie being filmed in here right now, and a documentary being filmed on the making of that sci-fi action movie. And a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the documentary about the making of the sci-fi action movie. But we're the only podcast in the world being done right here, right now. I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And this is episode... You tell us.
Yeah.
You know. We don't. We don't. We aren't bound by your numbers, man.
We're just filling in.
We are.
Taking up space.
Yep.
Podcast space.
And time.
Audio space.
Temporal doorstops.
Yep.
For those of you just joining us, this is weird for you. There's a hat. It's magic. Has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Said hat is magic in that it has its own email address, and we don't mess with it.
Nope.
It does. People, probably you, write into that email address with comments, questions, topics, that kind of thing. And the hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Other dudes, usually... reach into that hat, draw out the note cards at random, read them on the air, talk about them until they're bored, and do that for about an hour. But on a day like this, it's us instead.
Yep. Filling in.
So, if you don't like this episode, you should stop because we're way better than them. And I was hoping to hit you with that.
Better, huh? Just more evil.
Are you, like, charmed or something?
That's no. Weird. You just twice don't, know, just don't know what you're doing.
That is true, too. I feel like it could be a little from both.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
So, that's it.
Yep.
So, we're just going to sit here for another 55 minutes or so.
Good idea. That's all a right. Good plan. That's an evil plan. Is that from The Dating Game?
It is, in fact. Although before then, it's A Little Spanish Flea. It actually has lyrics and everything. He was a little Spanish flea, a record star he thought he'd be. He heard of singers like Beatles, the chipmunks he'd seen on TV. Why not a little Spanish flea? And I only know that because of The Simpsons.
They just made that up, though.
Do you think?
Probably. I don't know. I don't know.
Usually I can tell when they're making up lyrics, like when they say, here in my car, I am hosing off blood.
Okay, yeah, but that's a real
some of it's mine, song. But most of it's not.
But that's a something that didn't have lyrics, that they put lyrics to and tried to convince everybody it always had lyrics.
That would be really cool if that's what it is. I've been discovering lately I have way too much Simpsons knowledge in my brain.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that before.
Well, not us. Someone.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting confused because I actually listen to those things.
That's weird.
I know. I shouldn't. You always tell me I shouldn't.
I tell you, you shouldn't do a lot of things that you do. Smoke, drink, debauch, take pennies.
I only do that last one.
Can that be a verb? I mean, is that what...
I don't know.
When one is committing debauchery, that be to debauch?
Debauch?
Debauch.
I don't
know. A little more New York, as I say. Come on, it feels like it should be said that way, debauch.
I'm all verklempt.
Yes.
Debauch
amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. No, I won't.
And if we just happen to have drawn something from coffee.
Coffee? No big whoop.
Coincidentally. Define joy. Oh, that is a good,
request. She was Earl Hickey's ex-wife on that show, played by Jamie Presley.
Define joy.
Dishwashing fluid? Well, okay, let's start out this way. Is joy distinct from other words that might be considered synonyms of joy? Is joy distinct from happiness?
I think so, because, well, I mean...
There's something ecstatic associated with joy to me.
Well, right. I mean, whenever you're asked to define something, definitions are not static things, obviously. You know... Words are social constructs, the definitions of which are also social constructs that change over time. But to me, joy is just as you're saying. There's something ecstatic about it. Happiness is closer to content. You know, contented, a state that you can be in.
Yeah.
Over like a period of time, whereas joy is something you experience at moments in time. You know, you're not in a constant state of joy. You can be happy, like, you know, for days and permanently happy if you want to. But joy is something that you experience only at certain moments. I think you're right. I think it has to do with, you know, you're approaching something that's more akin to ecstasy or an ecstatic experience than just being happy or contented.
Point of order, though. Nowadays, the kids don't call it ecstasy. They call it Molly. I don't even want you to laugh more, and I don't want to laugh more, but I feel really good about that joke. I feel really good about that joke. I feel like that's a classy joke.
I'm of the opinion, and, you know, I think this is the kind of thing that there are a lot of other people who seem to think this also, including, you know, Joseph Campbell. I believe he was one of the... Well, no, I shouldn't say put it that way. He talked about following your bliss, which is...
All the way to the bank.
Which is a concept that comes from a lot of...
shitty self-help books?
No, but from a lot of spiritual traditions. I'm sure it goes back to the very beginning of humanity, this idea that, you know, the thing that not so much that you should do, but that people actually do, with a hallmark of human life and human behavior, is there's something in your experience that becomes the most important thing to you, the thing that gives you the most joy, for example, the most fulfillment, the most profound experience, and that thing is the thing you live your whole life around, that thing.
Hey buddy, did my bliss just come by here? did you see my bliss?
Yeah, it's that way. Keep following
that way. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm good.
But all don't right. Catch it, because then you're not following it anymore.
No, I gotta be sneaky.
sneak up on your bliss. No, yeah. but
did he look concerned?
But I think if you look at, you know, the human behavioral sciences, if you look at history, you find that, you know, more than just about any other thing, you know, genetics or culture, anything like that. Those things are constraining forces on a human being. But ultimately, you know, every human being has something that is clearly the most important thing to them. The thing that they would do anything to secure, to pursue, to possess maybe. And I mean, to the extent where a human being, it overrides a person's desire to survive. I mean, people will risk their lives for this thing. Or people will, if it looks like this thing is going to be taken away from them permanently, they'll fight to get it back because at risking their own lives to do so, because if they can't have the thing, they don't even want to live anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think joy is, you know, that experience you have when you, I don't know, when you are in that place where you're enjoying that thing, whatever it is. I think that's something everyone has to find for themselves, obviously, but I guess this is just a long way of agreeing with you that it's kind of close to the ecstatic experience or ecstasy in an emotional, spiritual sense.
Well, and it frequently hits up against, because you talk about the sort of idea of following your bliss, this idea of what do you want, go do that. And it hits up against socially the whole, what should you be doing? And this is a constant struggle. It's a constant narrative theme. I think it's a constant theme in life. People who are doing what they're doing, not because it's what they want or because it makes them happy, but because it's what they feel they should be doing, what they're supposed to be doing. And that's a pretty big step people frequently have to come out of saying, yeah, but what do you want out of life? Pursue that.
Well, I'm not so sure it's actually very rarely something that you choose. I mean, I think you can choose it. I mean, I think you can reflect on it.
No, but you can be in denial about it.
Yeah, that's right.
You can be in denial or just not. I mean, because I almost went so far as to say that I feel like joy is something you have to be conscious of in order to experience. And I'm not sure that is true, but I think that helps. You need to think, what makes me happy? What do I want? And then pursue it. Otherwise, you're basically only going to accidentally stumble into joy. And I think people don't think about it, and they live in denial, and they're like, oh no, this is exactly what this is. And you know, the classic example, the nice paying job, the spouse and the two kids, this is of course what I wanted. And then they're like, wait.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I mean,
it's a cliche, but for a reason.
Like I say, I think it's a hallmark of humanity that survival is not the most important thing to human beings. The most important thing to human beings is this: is joy, is bliss, is you know, human beings live for leisure, basically.
Yeah.
That's what they want, and to the extent that if it's taken away from them, they will risk their very lives to get it back. And so it is kind of an interesting thing and a very recent development in human history, I believe, for there to be, for people to feel a lot of social pressure to say something is their bliss or say something is the most important thing to them when it really is not. And so,
well,
living
relatively
this,
recent, give me a time frame.
Well,
I think that goes back at least a few centuries.
Right. What I'm getting at is, I mean, there's always been culture. There's always been, you know, the culture can have, there can be taboos in culture and there can be a lot of pressure in any culture going way back. But what I'm talking about that seems new to me, and probably, maybe you're right in terms of the time frame, I don't know. I mean, I'm just sort of talking about this just now and thinking about it, is, well, for example, we live in a world that, as I look out at it and I observe people's behavior and I try to figure out, you know, what are they devoted to, right? What are people, what would a does a person ostensibly, I mean, watching and observing what appears to be their bliss and their joy. And oftentimes it's not what they would say it is if you ask them.
Absolutely.
And here I'm specifically thinking even of like religion.
Absolutely.
Lots of people say they're in our country, for example, say they're Christians, they believe in God and whatever. And they speak as though that's their avenue to joy and bliss and you know, religious awakening or whatever. They say that. But when you watch them, they're yep. clearly not experiencing that when they go to church or when yeah. they hang out or they have Bible
full
study.
Full disclosure, that's not true of everybody. There are some people.
No, right.
There are some Christians who really
yes,
their
but
jam.
That's right. But
there
in
are
my,
a lot that aren't.
In my observation, that's a minority of people who call themselves Christians.
I would agree.
The vast majority of people, if you watch, if you observe their behavior, you can see what they're devoted to, and it's not God. It's
yeah.
not their religion. It's not Jesus. But we live in a society that where somehow that's worked out and it's okay. Those people don't feel repressed or anything because they can go worship the Chicago Cubs or whatever it is they actually worship.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to be bothered. Nobody else seems to notice.
Within certain parameters.
Yeah, that's right. Right, right.
The great one, of course, is all the frequently politicians, but big public figures who decry something and then it turns out actually that's really their deal.
Yeah, like homosexuality.
Homosexuality is the classic
yeah,
one.
That's another thing that you observe when you're sort of like marriage in the United States. It seems like very few married couples I've known. I hesitate to say this, but this is pretty much true. Very few married couples I've known seem to have their marriage built around, you know, an amorous relationship, you know, like being in love with one another. A lot of married couples...
Or even just actually wanting to be with each other.
Yeah, a lot of married couples seems like it's an exchange.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of them, like
yep.
the majority of, to the extent, and then if you watch the either part of that couple interact with other people, you start to see who they really have intimate relationships
yep.
with.
Yep.
Not necessarily sexual or physical,
no.
but intimate.
The people that they like more, the people that they feel closer
yeah, yeah,
to,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
that kind of thing. Well, and this is, I talk about this constantly. You've heard me go on about anytime somebody says, oh, my wife is my best friend. And there's so many times that I'm like, I know both of you. That's super not true. it's sweet that you think so, but that's not true. Or just recently, someone's bringing up again my dinner with Andre. And there's a section where Andre's talking about he had to stop and really consider the possibility that maybe he didn't want to be with his wife. Maybe that wasn't what he wanted. And when he actually let himself think about it, he realized that absolutely is what he wanted and what he always wanted. But he didn't really know that until he was like...
Until he looked at it. Yeah.
And so many people, and marriage is a big one because marriage is such a social duty and commitment. Unless it's one of these nowadays where you're like, oh, I'll just get divorced. But anyway, but the concept that so many people are like, oh, of course. Well, and especially when you add time to it. We've been married for 30 years. Of course this is what I want to be doing.
Well, the thing about all of this is, though, I've developed a particular theory about sexual orientation and how that's acquired in a person's life and whatever. And the theory suggests that there ought to be all things. If you take the gender binary away and you don't try to tell people what their orientation ought to be, you let them
tell you.
If you lived in a world like that, there ought to be a lot more gay people than there are. Well, actually, the theory suggests that there are a lot more gay people
than there are.
But the reason you don't see more gay people is because they're adapting in some way
yep.
to the prevailing culture. And it seems like one way that might be happening is it's acceptable in our culture for a married couple to have kind of an arrangement. I mean, they don't really have to be in love, whatever that means.
Yeah. Or
it doesn't have to be. They can just sort of have a contract with one another, and everyone around them can kind of know that's what it is, and they're okay with that.
Yeah.
And then they can have...
It's a classic staple of stand-up. Once you get married, you never have sex again, you know, except on your anniversary or whatever. You know, that's a classic joke.
Well, but what I'm saying is that there's some serious adaptation going on where people are they're married for 50 years and they are happy in a manner of speaking.
Content, yeah.
Yeah. They use each other as a sexual outlet for the things they really feel for other people that is buried so deep in their subconscious that they don't even really know it themselves. Oh, yeah. So they are able to use their partner for sexual gratification, and then they go have these really deep and intimate friendships with people of the same sex that they would completely deny as anything but a friendship, but it is more than that to them. Maybe not to the other people, but to them.
Yeah.
And so there are so many layers, right, of this out there, and I guess that's kind of what I'm talking about with religion, with sex, with a lot of things. Our culture is so specific about how people have to be, mm-hmm, that it doesn't change what their bliss or what their joy is. They just have to find different ways and adapt different ways there. And some people can do it successfully and live a long life and not even realize they're doing it differently than regular heterosexuals do or regular Christians do. But there are some people who can't do that, right? The adaptations aren't enough. They're going to go crazy. They're going to have a mental illness. They're going to act out. They're going to snap and shoot up a mall, you know, whatever. So,
well, and nowadays, this is the thing that bugs me anytime somebody talks about, back in the day, we didn't have this kind of people, or people weren't doing this. I'm like, that's because they weren't able to say it.
Yeah. Like,
they were there. They just didn't hang out with you, and they were really quiet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we're in a society now, not where we're suddenly getting more, whatever you want to say, more homosexuals, more furries, more whatever, you know, more atheists, whatever it is. No, we're finally at a point where people feel that they can actually say that. And the technology helps, but also society.
Yeah.
I'm allowed. There's a time period where I would not have been allowed. And, I mean, you and I, because sexual orientation is always a huge thing for you and I anyway, but it's funny you talk about this, because I knew someone back in my past, and those of you may know from that, I obviously won't say who it is, but it was a woman who was married to a man, and was absolutely clearly lesbian, just a ridiculous degree, and you could tell because of the way she reacted around meeting any new women. She just doted on them and was fast. And it was specifically women, because when she would meet guys, not that she was unfriendly or whatever, but there was just this attitude. But she was in complete denial. Over the years, she finally got to the point where she would embarrassingly admit she was probably bi. Not that anything ever she acted on, but she was came from an upbringing such that that was just not okay. But we all were like, clearly, because the way she interacted with most females she knew was so much more intimate and sweet and happier than her interacting with her husband.
And this isn't about gaydar or something. This is about observing behavior.
This is about actual actions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, there's plenty of people that I think are gay just based on my gaydar. But, you know, that's just a fun game. That's like what the fortune cookie told me and whether I pay attention.
No, you know, we're talking about this is like observing people's
literally
behaviors.
Her actions made it really obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is somebody who is actually pretty good friends with her husband and spent a lot of social time with her husband. But they were like buddies. And unfortunately, I know, because they would talk, they still had a sex life and everything. But, yeah, no, that intimacy was not there.
Yeah.
Well, and so you see that kind of thing. Yeah, you see that thing a lot. And I do want to say, I don't, just so that there's no confusion here, I think William would agree, you can discover new things in life that bring you joy know about before.
No, that's right.
What we were talking about earlier is you can't decide this is what's going to bring me joy now.
No. I think
you can't decide this is the thing that I'm most passionate about. I wasn't, but now, like, I'm going to make it. You can't do that. It's something that you have, and it's okay. I get a lot of these things. Just recently, I've been pondering a fair bit. I mean, I'm a fairly introspective individual, I think, but issues I have related to sexual identity, gender identity, even other, I'll just say kinks of mine and leave it at that. Like a lot of introspective people, I like to think about, where did this come from? How did this start? Because, you know, my journey in life has, I haven't always felt the same about my sexual identity as I go. And some of them, I feel like I can actually take an educated guess at things in my life that may have caused certain things. Mm-hmm. And I have talked about this with friends, and they're like, oh no, you know what? Don't judge yourself. And I'm like, no, I'm not saying, even if it's something that I'm like, oh, this came out of this bad thing. If it's something that gives me joy now and I'm not hurting anybody or hurting myself with it, it's fine. And, but I can look at some of them. There, a lot of stuff with my gender identity, I now realize, okay, I didn't know that if I was going to actually. So as I think it's come up before, I consider myself transgender. I don't consider myself transsexual. I don't consider myself a woman trapped in a man's body. I never have that. I believe the early way, back when I didn't know what transgender was, I told people I was just a man who wished he had been born a woman. But and that's not even an accurate statement anymore. But I have some gender dysphoria issues, and right, I deal with them in various ways. But by and large, I live as a male in the real world, and I do fine with it. Over the years, and especially more recently, I think there's a good chance that a lot of my gender identity issues are less about feeling like I'm female and more about something caused me to sort of really want to reject masculinity from an early age. And I'm okay with that. Like, I mean, like if it was happening right now and I was aware of that, I might try. And I do try and sort of look into what are my issues there or whatever. But mostly I'm like, this is how I am now, and I'm perfectly happy being like this. So it's interesting to figure out why, but it doesn't mean I have to change anything or say like, oh, this is wrong now or something like that. And stuff like, I mean, people, for purely hypothetical example, people can develop fetishes based off of sometimes abusive situations that happen. And sometimes that can be really unhealthy, depending on how you do it. But sometimes that can be totally fine. And if it is something that you're dealing with in a healthy way at this point, it can be interesting to track it down and be like, oh, that's where that comes
from.
Well,
and it can be
it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong.
It can also
be
therapeutic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, it's
cathartic.
It's your way of coping with the thing that happened. Yes. And so there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, the thing happened. That's too bad. But now you've got this thing, and it helps you feel better. It's not, like you said, it's not hurting anyone. You know, they're,
if you're doing it to ingest negative self-image and stuff, that is, but then there's some issues. But yeah, no, it's not necessarily. And
well, when I say it's not hurting you, including you, I mean,
absolutely.
You are included in that. If it's not hurting you and it's not hurting anyone else, but it gives you a good feeling, or it helps you.
Brings you joy.
Brings you joy, especially in up against that memory of that behavior. Well, then that's, you know, you really can't say there's anything wrong with it, as far as I'm concerned.
And I do feel like I've strayed a little bit, but I have a point that ties in here, which is all the things we're talking about here are random and in some cases sort of happenstance potential causes, and maybe not even unknown causes, mysterious causes. And it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's interesting, and sometimes if there's a problem, it's worth it. But what brings you joy, it doesn't and shouldn't really matter why.
That's right.
If it brings you joy. I mean, I'm not saying don't ever look at why, but I'm saying the why shouldn't impact whether or not that's an okay source of joy or whether or not you should pursue that.
Yeah.
Again, if you're not hurting anyone or yourself or anything like that, which is a huge factor in this, that's huge. And there's plenty of people who are pursuing their joy, and it's fucking up other people. It's fucking them up. Stop pursuing that joy. Find a different way to pursue that joy. But outside of that, if it's like, oh, this came from something really stupid, or from something really kind of dark, or from something really random,
well,
or from something I'm not even sure. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, there are a lot of people, I don't know if I should say a lot. There are some people. There are people who exist whose bliss, whose joy comes from other people's pain. I can't wrap my brain around that, but those people do exist. And it's unfortunate because those people really make it crappy for everybody else.
Yes, and to a large degree, those people probably need help. But also, there are adaptations to deal with that.
Yeah,
so if that's a thing, well, and this is an interesting one because this came up a while ago. Recently I read a really disturbing article, but that's a separate one on this topic. A while back, I read an article that was basically a character study looking at a group of pedophiles. But these pedophiles were people who genuinely knew this is not okay, and I don't actually want to abuse or hurt any children or anything like that. I have these urges, I have these desires in my head, and I know that, and I know that's not okay, and I don't want to do anything about it.
Right. My want to do these things is not, presently anyway, is not overwhelming my want to protect these people not harm them.
So one can be in a situation where one has a joy that is dependent on harm, but still have the wherewithal to be like, I don't want to pursue that joy.
Right.
And then potentially you find adaptations.
Yeah.
And I'm not even going to go into what that is, but that's the point is even if you find that you are somebody in that situation, it doesn't mean you have to go around harming people.
Right.
And it doesn't mean, honestly, and it doesn't mean you have to deny your joy necessarily.
Yeah.
It may mean you can't act on your joy. It may mean a lot of ifs and things like that.
I get where you're coming from, I think.
I would like to apologize for coffee. I know I'm evil, but I feel like...
No, you're not evil.
No, dude, Mr. Episode, evil. Remember?
You're not evil in that way, evil.
No, but we did have a question that was entirely listed as define joy. That is the sum total of it. And managed to get onto pedophilia. So I feel like I owe coffee an apology.
Well, as far as defining joy, to me, joy is, you know, it's the quintessential human experience. I also think that joy is the quintessential experience of joy is a social experience in my observation.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll have to think. I don't know that I've ever thought about it, but just shooting from the hip here, I feel like I would disagree, at least for me personally. Because I feel like most of my joy is a very sort of personal, individualized thing. I guess insofar as some of it relates to dealing with other people, then it becomes social. But a great deal of my joy does not relate to other people. Again, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying
I would have gone. I'm thinking of it in a particular way, I suppose. Okay, let me give you an example.
You mean joy is sociological.
There's a particular moment where I experienced joy sort of spontaneously, not really in relation to, you know, feeling like I achieved my bliss or a religious experience, for example. But
yes, we call that orgasm.
But spontaneously,
also pretty proud of that joke.
In a way that I didn't anticipate, for example.
Yeah.
Was the time I witnessed the birth of a human being,
which you've told on here.
Yeah, it's indescribable, you know, and I didn't expect that. I mean, I didn't know what to expect, actually. And it's not that I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I was aware of the process.
That's where they come from. Oh my God.
I was aware of the process. I might even have seen it once in a health class movie or something. I mean, I don't know. But being in the room, and, you know, I think it might have helped also that I spoke to the mother ahead of time, and, you know, I understood what her situation was and what this meant to her, you know. Now, on one hand, I experienced that joy myself. It was a subjective experience.
Man.
But
No, I would definitely say that was social.
Without a social context, you see.
And I would agree. And to that extent, I would agree that, that joy can be a social
experience. Well, here's another example. Let's say I am meditating, and in the process of meditation, as meditation can do, I have an ecstatic experience.
That's called orgasm.
To me, that's social in the sense that, for me personally, I would experience that as a kind of communion with the divine or something. There's not another human being present there, but that's not the point. Human beings are always, in my observation, they're always social. I mean, even when you're by yourself and you're thinking, you're kind of having a conversation with yourself. You've internalized the social context, and now you don't have to have another person in order to have a conversation. In fact, not only can you have a conversation with yourself, you can have a conversation with one of your friends inside your head. I mean, sometimes you and I have conversations in my head.
Oh yeah, no, I bitch at you constantly.
Well, that's still, even though that's in my head and it's subjective, that's still a social situation. Okay. And all the emotions I get from it are from a social situation.
Arguing just logistically here, I think all you've successfully argued then is that just everything relating to humans is social.
Well, but that's what I think is true. Yes, I do think that's true.
Okay, in that case, specifying that joy is a social experience seems a little
irrelevant,
because everything is a social experience.
Well, to me, though, you see, when I say joy is a social experience, yes, I am in a way asserting that all things are a social experience, but not everybody thinks that's true.
No.
I mean,
me, for instance.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think that's true. I do think that's true, and based on some empirical things, but, I mean, you know, there's so much going on subjectively that there's no proof for it, obviously, but that's
well, and at barest bones you can get into weird semantic arguments,
right yeah. So
it's just weird. You've been sitting here essentially arguing for joy as a social experience, where the argument is essentially, well, to me everything is. So I'm like, so why are you arguing specifically about joy?
Well, I wasn't because it wasn't an argument, it was just a statement.
Well, I mean argument in a very denotative sense. I didn't mean we're like fighting or anything.
No,
the argument you were putting forth,
well,
for the claim.
I know what you mean, but when I was saying it about joy, I was more stating a definition than stating an argument or a position. I was just saying, this is what joy is. I think it's a social thing. Yes, I think everything's a social thing, but joy is included in that in a way where most people might not think that it is. I think it can happen. And where I was going with that was, I was going to say that it can happen spontaneously. There's two ways I think joy can happen. It can sort of percolate up through your experience, like if you're meditating or if you're deliberately engaging in something that you know is going to give you bliss or joy. You know, mm-hmm. like you're working on a piece of art or whatever. So it can come across. It can,
in my personal experience, that one is definitely the minority version.
Or it can happen spontaneously in, like I say, usually a social situation. I don't know how it comes about spontaneously when you're by yourself.
Well, and I might be misspeaking. My realization that I'm experiencing joy or feeling joyous is frequently spontaneous and somewhat surprising. It is possible, but definitely in the minority of my experience, for me to be like, I'm going to do this, and this thing brings me joy, and it does, and that
really
happens.
I'm
in no way do I think this is the norm for it. I'm saying for me personally, that seems to happen, and it's often those things like the, oh, like I'm surprised to find this is giving me joy, because it's often like people say, like the simple things or whatever, like the cup of tea I made. This is really, you know, that kind of thing. You know, I sound like a fucking Hallmark card, but that's often how it works for me. Not always, and I like to think as I get older and I get mature, I don't want to ever be called mature straight out. I'm smarter about it, and I do seek out my joy, and I am more successful in finding it, but not to the degree that I'd say that's my most common. I normally still get my joy off the street at random.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm the exact opposite. I'm very deliberate about it, you know, for a couple of reasons.
Sneaking up on Joy.
I'm
going to get you.
One, because I think,
wrestle Joy
again, that's just what humans do. But I also think that it's, when you do this, you're not just doing it for yourself. I mean, it makes the whole world better when you seek out and find your bliss and your joy. Because again, first of all, like I say, to me, it's always a social thing. So there's always at least going to be someone right next to you who's benefiting from it. But the whole world does benefit from it. It's too bad we live in a culture that's so laden with shame and so laden with rules about what you should value, what you should find joy and bliss in, because it means a lot of people are sad, are bitter, are depressed.
And are ignorant of what gives them joy.
And they're just dragging down everybody else. And the people who aren't so constrained in their search for joy often will run into brick walls from the people who are, there's almost an unconscious thing going on with those people saying, how dare you go look for your bliss? Yeah. I can't, so you're not going to either. And it just, if everyone could just follow their bliss, look for their joy, again, so long as they're not harming anyone else, the whole world would be so much better off.
Well,
to
do it non-judgmentally, even amongst yourself. I mean, how many people have been like, this gives me joy, and that's bad, so I'm going to deny that joy.
Well, and there's also this aspect you hear a lot of people say, well, you know, you got to be realistic. You can't always get what you want or have what you want. Well, that's beside the point. I mean, I don't think joy or bliss is something that...
It's not that specific.
No, it's not something
you
that
don't
have to have
specifically $1 million.
Yeah, or a specific job or win American Idol. I mean, that's not what it's about.
Oh, yeah. Bad shit happens to me all the damn time. So many aspects. Well, and not anymore. No, bad shit still happens to me. But as I've said many times, I lead a fairly, what a lot of people would consider fairly unambitious and modest and simple life. And I don't have a lot of things that, you know, if a genie's granting me wishes, I would wish for. But I'm totally cool with that. And I really enjoy lots of stuff just in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And is it, if I just got to pick everything, is this the life I would pick? No, not remotely. except probably Trish.
Right.
Knowing that now, when I was younger, I wouldn't have. But no, I mean, I wouldn't pick the shitty house and the really low paying job and all that jazz. But I like it, and I find joy in it.
Well,
and it's not those specifics too. There's a broader concept that I find joy in, and I don't know what that is. I'm kind of tired, so I can't even think of it now. But that's the thing. It doesn't have to, you can find it somewhere.
Right.
Hell, people found joy. Oh, God. I feel very Godwin-ish here. But some people found joy in concentration camps.
Yes.
If you can find moments of joy in a concentration camp, you can find joy every place.
Yeah. You know, Viktor Frankl was, you know, that was his big thing, to point out that it's not that it was good there or whatever, but his
point... Or that it was, the joy was worth the rest of it.
No.
Like that.
But his point was that there's not, if given that reality of concentration camps, it makes it seem as though there's not anything that can really crush the human spirit absolutely. Now, that isn't to say, well, all those people that didn't find joy in the concentration camps are just a bunch of Debbie Downers or something. We're not saying that.
And you can definitely make it, situations can occur that make joy harder to get to.
Yeah. Understandably,
but never impossible.
Yeah, never impossible. That's the key. Hard, even so hard that you can't blame someone for not finding it. But it's also important to say,
I would never blame somebody for not.
Well, but some people do.
Absolutely.
Some people do.
No,
but people are, but not impossible. And to be able to say not impossible, well, that gives you hope, and it gives you hope for your situation. If, like most people, you're not living in a concentration camp, look around you, and you'll probably find. You know, I suppose there are some people who, I mean, the thing they want is to win American Idol, and that's just what they want. And I can't I can't argue with him about that. But
I can. No, I can, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
I don't think anybody's bliss is winning American Idol. I think if you think that's what it is, dig deeper. And I'm not saying that that wouldn't be awesome for you and might give you bliss, but that seems really specific.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I'm like, look at what it... Well,
and it just never really is that.
As the thing I've talked about on here, I've mentioned this recently that I'm thinking about starting a blog.
Yeah.
But anonymous. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out my reasonings for it. And it's this thing again. Am I craving attention? Like, do I want... Why am I not just writing it on the computer? Is this me wanting people to pay attention? And then what does that mean? And it's the same thing. Why... American Idol is not a end unto itself. Why do you want
Yeah.
What does that mean? Because there... Whatever... I'm not saying American Idol won't necessarily give you joy, but if winning American Idol will give you joy, so will other things.
There's something
things.
Else that probably will, yeah, right.
It's not the only thing out there that's going to do it.
Right.
And you can find this. And I'm not saying don't go out for American Idol, although I am saying that because let's let that show die. But dig deeper. What is it? Because it's, joy is seldom that specific. I feel now... I don't know, my last few statements, I feel like I'm getting very pretentious.
You think
I feel like I'm claiming knowledge I don't have claim to.
No, I think you're making some very valid and good points.
Yeah, but I pulled a Holocaust reference, so I got to shut myself down. Also, at this rate, we're only going to have one question, so let's fix that.
All right.
Maybe the next one will say, define pedophilia, and we'll talk about
I hope Coffee wasn't disappointed in that long... meandering and probably not even really an answer.
I don't care because I'm evil. I'm sure good me would also be. Well, it's coffee's night.
Okay.
Or day. We don't know what time it is.
Yeah.
Besides basic frying, how do you like your potatoes?
Well, I think my favorite way is mashed.
Really?
Yeah.
Mashed, not smashed. Not whipped. These are distinct.
Yeah, varieties. They are distinct, but any one of those, as far as I'm concerned, would be fine. I think. I prefer it over fried. I do like fried potatoes.
Yeah.
I prefer it over fried. I prefer it over, like, baked potato, although I like that, too.
Not a big baked guy.
Scalloped is okay, but, I mean, mashed potatoes are just, or whipped or whatever, is the best, as far as I'm concerned.
If... we're setting aside everything else, and we're saying we're going to deal with potatoes and some sort of fat, oil to fry it, butter, whatever. If that's it, because I'm like, if we get into like adding in stuff, then I get more purposes. But I feel like that's cheating because I'm like, I like scalloped potatoes with bacon more than a plain baked potato. Well, of course, you know. So you're going to set all of this aside. Only ingredients are potatoes, salt, and some sort of fat.
Sure.
Butter or oil.
Sure.
Given that, hash browns are up there. Not home fries or American fries, hash browns. The shredded in a patty fry.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
I love those. And I love them way better than the other
ones.
That
doesn't count as fried, though? As a variety of fried potato?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. Fuck you, Coffee. I'm going to talk about my fried potatoes. I'm going to talk about my favorite potato. That is a good one.
Yeah, I like those too.
Twice baked, also really like. That might be cheating though, because I feel like twice baked always has some stuff in it. But twice baked is very nice. And then I really like but I think for me specifically, it's whipped potatoes more than mashed or smashed. But yeah, fried is a big one. Fried is a big one for me. It's. I might be with you if we're just going on the basis of potato. But I like them really smooth. I don't like lumps, and I don't like the skin. I mean, I like them fine, but if I get my druthers...
Oh, I see.
Smooth.
Well, I don't mind skin, and I don't mind lumps at all. But, like, really smooth, like you're saying, whipped, yeah, that's really nice. That's really nice. Yep. And that way you can do less work in the chewing department.
Yeah, no, you don't even. You just put it on your tongue and you push it against the roof of your mouth and just start
Yeah. So there's that appeal to you for less work.
When
less work to eat the potatoes.
So
suck it through a straw.
I'm in London right now.
Right now?
No.
So, I'm not. How does that happen?
We have microphones and the internet. I mean, this could totally be... No. So back in the day, I'm in London, and Thanksgiving arrives.
American Thanksgiving.
Yes. Not a lot going on in London about
Probably
it.
Probably not.
But it's college thing. I'm in London for college, and there's a professor that's there all the time who's from the U.S., and she's part of this program or whatever. So she does this every year. She invites everybody over to her house, and we have Thanksgiving. So we do that, and it's a potluck thing. And we had discovered, because we now, it's Thanksgiving, so we've been there for a few months now. So we know the little differences there. And a big one is how the dairy products work. Here, you go to a store, you're buying milk. What are your options?
Oh, well, you've got lots of options. You got skim, you got 1%, you got 2%, you got whole. You can get it a gallon, a half gallon.
Yes. That part I'm less concerned about. Pint. But yeah, skim, 1%, 2%,
whole. Chocolate.
Chocolate, buttermilk. But those are big. Over there, it is no fat or fat free, I forget which, half fat, and full fat.
Okay.
And we don't use numbers. We say full fat, half fat, or no fat. And it's true for just about all of them. So like sour cream, we'd have regular and we'd have light. Or we might have fat free.
Yeah.
Over there, they call it full fat, half fat, fat free, or no fat. So somebody was in charge of the potatoes. And they brought the potatoes. And they were just potatoes. And we tried them and we're like, these are really good. And they were like, yeah, there are a lot of full fat dairy products in this. And they didn't even specify, but they're just like, a lot of different full fat dairy products went in. And then we're like, oh, because if you put enough like butter and cream and everything else in them, you can make some really nice mashed potatoes.
No doubt. So, like if you put whole milk, you know, full fat, whatever,
yeah,
milk, butter, and like maybe some sour cream.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, those would be great potatoes for sure.
And that becomes a thing now that we say with certain foods, like, well, this is really good, but like, well, it's because it has a whole lot of full fat dairy products. So yeah, that's been a reference point for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I miss those days. You could also buy a plastic 2-liter bottle of hard cider for like £3 in the grocery store. Missed that place. Not London, just the grocery
just
store.
Just the grocery store.
I missed the Tesco down the street from my flat.
What would happen? Now let's think about this for a second. So,
all right, let's think.
Here we are in Iowa City. In Iowa City, there are specialty supermarkets. You can go to a specialty supermarket that sells, stuff that, I don't know, a Lebanese person might find in their supermarket. There's a specialty supermarket you can go to that looks like a Lebanese supermarket.
You almost said a lesbian supermarket. I don't even know what that would look
no,
like.
No, I did not say that.
You did. I'm not saying you said it.
I did not almost say it either.
You did because of a tongue slip.
We've got, no, I didn't.
You did. I heard you.
I think there's a specialty supermarket for like Chinese goods and foods.
There's a few Asian markets in town.
So what if there was a specialty market that looked like a British supermarket?
That would be awesome.
Would it be successful?
No. Well, no, it really? Would because I would buy all of the things. But
I would buy all of the things.
Yes, but once I ran out of money, it would not do well. No.
There's not. So you think that there are more, say, Lebanese and Chinese people in Iowa City than there are Brits?
No, that's not. Well, I think that's true also. But that's not what I'm saying. That's not why this is the case.
Okay.
It's also why, in general, it is rare to find a British restaurant. British consumer products, by and large, do two things that you can't do together if you want to be successful. They are different from what we have, but they are not exotic, particularly, in our culture.
See, what does that mean? I mean, what do you mean they're not exotic?
I mean, people aren't like, oh, that, I'll bet that has a really, and people are like, oh, so it's kind of like what we have, but just a little different.
Oh.
It's, when people get in, people have two responses to change. Either don't like change, or, yeah, let's do it, and so you're really going to go for it. So then you buy the weird hot chili whatever, or the squid whatever, if you're really going crazy. But nobody's like, yeah, let's just have the sausages, the pork sausages with slightly different seasoning. Or, you know, things like that. I mean, and I'm not saying that people will turn them down, but nobody's going to be like, I really need to go to the store where the cookie aisle includes some that are cheese-flavored. No, they're going to go to Hy-Vee and buy cookies and Cheez-Its, and they're going to be fine.
Okay.
Now, I will.
I thought it might be a cool idea. And in fact,
at work, there's a person sits near me, puts candy out in a little candy bowl, and I've decided I have to stay away from that. Like, literally, I'm not allowed to take from it anymore because I don't. That particular one was just the right sort of temptation, and I would do better. Because, like, I can have candy on Weight Watchers and stuff, you know, I just got to record the points. But something about that one, I would abuse it. And so I finally just said, it's like the smoking thing. I'm like, I apparently can either abuse this candy dish or avoid it completely. So I'm going to avoid it completely. And I even told her, I'm like, this is my rule. And then one day, I'm passing by and I look, and somebody's put Jelly Babies in it. Jelly Babies are British candy.
Right.
The Fourth Doctor made famous, and they are the best thing in the world. And so not only did I waive the rule for that, I pretty much ate all of them out of that. And she didn't even know where they came from. She's like, somebody brought them over. And it's weird because they're not individually packaged, so they're just in there.
Yeah.
Just loose, so who knows what food poisoning I got. But I ate the shit out of those.
What if it was an English and German market?
I think you have a better shot. I still don't think you're going to have as much luck.
What if it was an Italian market? All imported Italian stuff that you could...
Well, I know that won't work because that literally existed and closed.
Really? What was this?
Yes. It was over on Gilbert. I think it was called Gino's or something like that. And it was... A little part of it was a restaurant, a very high-end restaurant, but mostly it was just an Italian market. And it did not do well.
Huh.
Well, especially in this day and age... sadly, the only reason the Asian markets work is because we got a high Asian population. As much as I think they're cool, me and other intrigued white guys like me are not going to keep a place like that afloat.
No, probably not.
And especially in this day and age where I can order everything online.
Yeah.
But it is too bad. I would love that kind of thing. All right, we should wrap it up. Because it's time and because it's too damn hot. So whenever this was, we hope you enjoyed it, and tune in next week for regular people.
Yep.
And in the meantime, I know where you live, and I watch you sleeping.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.